This is PBF Public Radio, Radio Free America, podcast episode number 73, and I am Romeo 1 Oscar. So today, anything exciting going on today? Yes, there is an election in our illustrious cathedral of media, plus academia, plus leftist, is in full scare. Now, why is that? Because all of the early voting data appears to show that Republicans are showing out ahead of Democrats. You combine that with the gambit they had. The Democrats' plan was to go with the early voting. And, I mean, some of the earliest voting we've seen, mail-in voting, early voting, and that this would turn out to their advantage. What we have discovered is that this isn't going the way they thought. Sort of like their own goal. Is it a penalty shot own goal? Maybe, I don't know, maybe in 2 months when they finally allow us to call the election, we'll know for sure, right? But they basically frightened their people away from the polls. And then they began basically going after the integrity of our post office and claimed that Trump was rigging the postal service and then stealing mailboxes. And so you scared people at home with CNN, MSNBC, WAPO, New York Times, and then you attacked the postal service. So you've made it difficult. Is that what really caused all of this? I don't know. There are so many weird variables to this election that I do not know. I do know that Florida looks very positive for Trump if we're going off of the metric of who has voted already? Republicans. Now, how many of those Republicans became never Trumpers, like John Kasich and William Bill Kristol and all the other national security experts that want us to go in the never ending wars and just kill overseas, right? Not stateside, kill against enemies who both foreign and domestic. No. These people want to be part of the military-industrial complex that David Dwight Eisenhower warned us of, that Smedley Butler warned us about. But how many of the Republicans fall into that category? My guess is few, and you've got to look at this too. I think that traditionally what we have seen is, well, look, there's a realignment going on. And there's many different factors here, but with the conservatives in the United States, people have often found themselves in the Republican Party. And what you've got is a large middle class base of support for the Republican Party, while the elites leading the Republican Party have traditionally, you know, with the rhinos and the neocons, you know, you're supporting the military industrial complex and simultaneously sort of supporting corporate America. Now, remember what happened this summer when Trump was saying, discussing how he has support of people in the military, but not necessarily the generals, you know, not the not the locations, the leaders, I should say, of the elite who want us in these wars. There's a complete realignment going on with that. And so what you saw was the left quickly defending the war class. It's a complete realignment. I think that's what's got people with a lot of whiplash right now. It's hard to pin down. And I'm one of those people that sits and thinks about these things. And as I said on our episode, our Get Out the Vote PBF election episode that we did on Sunday, I may be wrong. These are just my thoughts. But right now, the data in Florida demonstrates Trump's ahead. And I did say I was going to discuss a specific piece that shows election data as it goes back to 1968. And the idea is, as Florida goes, so goes Pennsylvania and Michigan. And this goes all the way back to 68. Apparently, this is something that has occurred every year since 1968. So, Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota, New Hampshire do tend to also follow this data, as well as North Carolina and Iowa. But those other ones I mentioned, like Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and even Iowa sometimes do fall out of it. We do know that Seltzer poll, I think it was, came out for Iowa and showed Trump ahead 7 points, and that it has been a leading indicator there. The only 2 years that the data that I have shows where those are different were 1984 as well as 2004. So if this does follow trends, but remember, everything's being realigning, so I don't want to say that, you know, this isn't a magic crystal ball. If Trump does take Florida, if everything follows what has occurred in our voting since 1968, he will have Pennsylvania and Michigan. We know right now he's leading in Ohio. Trafalgar Group has him up in Wisconsin. I know that he has shown Minnesota to be very competitive for him. And even the Antifa Attorney General, Mr. Keith Ellison of the Council on Islamic Relations, as well as the Attorney General, has said that it's competitive. And that goes back to the George Floyd information. New Hampshire, I know that New Hampshire's weird. I haven't understood it because I know that they've got, or am I thinking Maine? Sorry, they all kind of blend together. You New Englanders, don't get upset. North Carolina, the data there as well, that's one of the other states on here. That shows in the early voting going by people who have turned their ballots in, it has been very strongly Republican. And again, remember too, in these states as well, Republicans are the people who get out there early and vote, or get out early on election day. They vote on election day. And the Democrats have scared their electorate. So, can Trump take those states? You know, they keep telling us Arizona's competitive. I really do questioned the data as well that showed us that the Democrats are more competitive in Texas, but I could be wrong. We will see how all these things play out. It's going to be a dumpster fire inside another dumpster fire, because there's already a dumpster fire. And today is going to be that. There are way too many things to make this, the variables are out of hand. You know, the Democrats have about every registered lawyer that has donated to the Democrat Party today is probably on call if they need them, so that they can try to deny the Trump votes and make sure that their hanging chads get counted. So while numbers show one thing, we know that there's all of these variables of that, as well as mail-in ballots. And we're going to have to see how this all comes together. So, what is Twitter, led by Jack Dorsey of the Rasputin / Osama bin Laden beard, what is Twitter doing for us? Twitter, even if Trump is winning, isn't going to allow him to tweet about it. They haven't said anything about Joe Biden, though. Isn't that crazy? And I get all these people, oh man, they're a private business, they can do what they want. The Section 230 protection for them doesn't allow them to make these decisions, as much as you people want to scream and cry that that's the case. But Twitter support, hey, thanks Twitter support, did put out something yesterday. A few weeks ago, we announced how we will handle tweets about U.S. elections. We want to remind you what to expect and share a preview. So here's essentially what it comes down to. There's only 7 outlets that are allowed to call the election. ABC News, AP, CNN, CBS News, Decision Desk HQ, Fox News, and NBC News. Wow, how unbiased of them, right? AP, which, you know, is willing to go overboard with political correctness in their style guide, capitalize the B in black after the Black Lives Matter insurgency kicked in, but not, don't capitalize white. Anyway, if one of these 7 outlets tweets from its main handle a result before another outlet from the same group of 7 confirms it, Twitter won't label that tweet. If a reporter or any Twitter user tweets a result without citing one of the select outlets for its decision, the tweet may be labeled. Twitter will label and will say official sources may not have called the race when this was tweeted. Find out more. The label will link to Twitter's curated election information hub. Now, I mean, we're seeing so many labels now. I wonder too, because this is something that's occurred in online advertising where, you know, people don't see things on the page that get in the way, banners, things like that. And I wonder if they're reaching a point like that. You know, how many times do you log into, say, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you are hit with get out there and vote type information, which isn't necessarily bad, but at the same time, it's you're hitting people so much. You know, you need to do it at a very select interval, and it's all over the place, and it's on anything that's posted that says vote. So the New York Post, which recently got out of election interference Twitter jail, has a little piece that U.S. election sets betting records overseas with $1 billion in wagers. The U.S. presidential election is proving to be a boom for bookies overseas. Total betting on the 2020 race between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden expected to approach the $1 billion mark. This is a huge gambling market. Matthew Shattuck, head of British gambling from GBC, told AFP News, "It is twice as big as 2016 and easily making it the biggest political event ever. The election has surpassed Super Bowl in terms of dollar bets and will be the biggest decision in the site's history since Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor bout in 2017. Earlier in the week, one person placed a $1.3 million bet on Biden. And so in this article, it says that's the biggest political bet of all time. However, that is no longer true. As of 7 hours ago, according to Fox News, businessman wagers $5 million on Trump winning the election. This bet can result in a $15 million payout. So that is now the biggest. In what I will classify as things that the shiny car looky-loo on the side of the road, voter punches poll worker arrested after forgetting ID at Clinton County Vote Center. Mulberry, Clinton County's clerk, has asked for extra police to be available to patrol polling sites on Election Day to protect voters and workers after a Frankfurt man became enraged and hit two poll workers Saturday in Mulberry. Police responded to a voting center in Mulberry, a town midway between Lafayette and Frankfort, for a reported disturbance early Friday afternoon. Douglas Earl, 48, of Frankfort, had entered the polling location wanting to vote, but did not have the required valid ID and was turned away by poll workers, according to county police. Earl then began walking around areas within the building where voting machines were and again was told to leave. After several attempts to get him to leave, Earl began striking two workers. So if you live in a state that requires you to have a voter ID, which every state should, however, we know that that's racist because apparently minorities, according to the leftists, are incapable of getting an ID, even though the states would supply one. But, you know, that is not the narrative. And when the cathedral tells us what the narrative is, then we must follow the cathedral. In another quick piece out of Hong Kong, Hong Kong democracy protesters support Trump, view Biden as weak. This is from the Daily Caller. Prominent pro-democracy Hong Kong protesters support President Donald Trump's re-election bid, citing his strong stance on China. The protesters, who have demonstrated against China's tightening grip on Hong Kong, believe that if Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden wins Tuesday's election, the U.S. stance on China could be weak. Do you think? Do you think when they gave $1.5 billion to Rosemont Seneca? And who knows what else? As Vice President Biden lead former President Barack Obama's China policy, according to The Atlantic. If Biden wins, he will return to his old path and honor international agreements without any drastic approach to contain China. Simon Lau, former policy advisor at Hong Kong government's defunct China policy think tank, SCMP, reported. So, that's not shocking. Is it? I don't think so. So here here's something that's an interesting little piece I'm going to close out with today. Not so ideological. Volunteer group warns of planned Antifa election violence, regardless of outcome. Former special forces and intelligence professionals purport to debunk theory that Antifa is ideological rather than a cohesive threat. This is from Holly McKay on Fox News. Local and federal law enforcement agencies around the country have had security plans drawn up for weeks in anticipation of any possible civil unrest that may be triggered by the result of the 2020 presidential election. Major cities still reeling from a summer of relentless demonstrations and riots are bolstering securities in their downtown areas as shops board up their windows. Security experts say that there are legitimate concern and reasons for cities to brace for brutality. Our intelligence shows that no matter who wins the election, they, Antifa, are planning a massive Antifa tent offensive bent on destroying the global order. They are not beholden to any one party. Their sole purpose is to create havoc, fear, and intimidation. Lewis is a former U.S. Army Green Beret, founder of First Amendment Praetorian, a crowdfunded volunteer force of military, law enforcement, and intel agency community professionals standing up to protect the First Amendment and those who use it. 1AP bills itself as a team dedicated to providing intelligence and security services to protect grassroots events from fear of outside agitators and disruptors, with the purpose of making patriotic and religious events safe again. We specifically focus on grassroots religious or political events. Larger companies can afford to hire their own security and intelligence teams, but we want the smaller and grassroots organizations to be able to keep safe. Short for anti-fascist, the left-wing group has come under intense scrutiny by the White House and Justice Department as an acute security threat, with President Trump earlier this year threatening to label the outfit a terrorist organization. However, critics of the administration's focus on the shadow leftist collective insist the peril posed has been overplayed dramatically. Democrat presidential nominee Joe Biden has also framed Antifa as an ideology rather than a cohesive body, as depicted by FBI Director Christopher Wray. But the likes of Lewis and those at the helm of 1AP, comprised of hundreds of volunteers with backgrounds working in law enforcement, government intelligence, military and special operations, beg to differ. Lewis said that while they started primarily as a security service, efforts on intel collection have ramped up in recent months, which includes a significant number of their volunteers quietly embedding with Antifa-like wings. Their intel efforts, he said, have also brought to life a trove of documents that indicate Antifa is far from a hodgepodge, spur-of-the-moment mobilization. We use the traditional intelligence fusion cycle: planning, direction, collection, processing, analysis, and production, dissemination, reevaluation. We are currently in the collection phase, and we have human, SIGINT, AUSINT, and TechINT capabilities. He continued, and like any network, the Antifa planning and funding comes from a few main sources and people, and then is splintered, filtered, and laundered out to their many affinity groups to maintain the no organization lie. In the report breakdown of one Washington, D.C. event helmed by the volunteer group in October, personnel depicted Antifa as having organizers, spotters, people to probe our defenses, and operatives who changed clothes multiple times at the event to try and evade. They also attempted to launch psyops and, if you believe it, tried and once again to insert a false Russian collusion operative narrative via an actor at the event, 1AP states. The most interesting part is that they start fake fights with each other to try and draw onlookers into the fray. Lewis also maintains that Antifa is much more advanced than people give them credit for in terms of intelligence collection and counterintelligence, and that they are frequently challenging their tactics, techniques, and procedures and logistics. For anyone who believes Antifa is just a grassroots idea and their attacks are organic, we have a simple answer. Do organic spur of the moment movements and actions need logistics, he continued, citing multiple open source documents that point to having a comprehensive funding and planning group, a PR group, and logistics. 1AP's collection and analysis network of food distributors, 1AP's collection and analysis allege a network of food distributors to sustain foot soldiers on the ground. along with fundraising efforts for financials and pre-planned events, which negates the organic spur of the moment talking points directly. How else did they have pallets of bricks pre-positioned on street corners? How do they have a comprehensive legal network ready to defend and bail out their operatives and foot soldiers at the drop of the hat? Lewis continued, underscoring that the apparent leaderless movement is comprised of different cells nationwide, with inner circles and outer circles. The inner circle only meets with certain leaders of the outer circle, who then pass the directions off to their peripheral groups. These cells and the other circle can be anywhere from 5,000 to thousands of people. This exact methodology is what allows them to say they aren't an organized group, as the majority of their numbers are made up by these peripheral cells or groups. In the 1AP view, Antifa is a deliberately decentralized organization in which there is no overall leader, and yet a number of the cells are issued similar instructions or specific complementary instructions with other sections they were working with. This strongly indicates a model of command where individual cell leaders are given instructions in private or through anonymous media. There is zero possibility of such a large coincidence. Moreover, Lewis claimed that professional analysts on their team routinely scour the internet, social media, and dark web, with some infiltrating their encrypted forums to have an ear out for anything they are saying and planning, highlighting that the level of operational security and tech savviness of the Antifa-affiliated groups is especially advanced. So this really backs up a lot of what we have seen. I am curious about this Antifa Tet Offensive, which is coming up. This is not a joke. At the same time, too, we don't know how serious this is. But we have been gaslit by the traditional media to think that this is nothing to be concerned with. This is something to be concerned with. Stay frosty. Keep in contact with people. And just try to live your lives moving forward. But be aware that this is on our soil. Enemies foreign and domestic, no matter what side people are on, is important to keep. Because I know we have many current and former members. Something to keep in mind. And I want to just have a little side note here. I want to thank everybody who's continued to follow us here. I've had to learn a lot in doing this. You know, I get up early, and I've probably been reading a lot of these articles for 2 hours before I come on, because I want to curate and find the best information for you people. And then I spend the time here in the podcast, and then I have to edit all of this later. And I've been communicating with people. I'm not an audio person. And as you guys know, if you've listened to this early on, I was trying to disguise my voice. You guys asked that I don't. You said it was hard to listen to. So I decided, all right, fine. I mean, look, I didn't want to do this. Not going to lie. I really didn't want to do this. I was asked by a friend to appear on a podcast last year. I did that. I was asked to reappear on another podcast, and the audience asked. And so I've been learning a lot here. This is something that, it's basically volunteer time, what I'm doing. But I think it's worthwhile as being a former member of the military. And I'm trying to improve this, and I have gotten feedback from some people that they do like the improvement they've seen. Trust me, I've learned a lot. I've got a mixer here. I've got things going through the computer. I'm trying to make this good, but also put this out in a timely manner. And so there are things that fall by the wayside, but the whole goal is to move this forward in a way that it's better each time. And for the most part, I've gotten a lot of feedback from people saying it has, but there are the detractors who don't like where it's at. They want it to be better. And unfortunately, in order to continue to put these out on a daily basis, and also I've got work I do, you know, I don't have the time to focus exclusively on this. It's not as if this is paying anything. The money that I've had that I've received from everybody has gone into equipment that I've purchased. And there's things I'm learning along the way. I haven't done everything right. I'm not a sound engineer, but I have gotten some really good feedback from people who do this. And so I am trying to improve this steadily. Putting this out with the time that I devote to both researching this as well as the recording of this, as well as creating the, what do you want to say, the images that I create and building that out, and then getting this uploaded and everything like that, processing this, editing the audio files, adding in the audio. There's a lot of times where you guys don't hear this, but then I've got to edit out where I'm sneezing, where I'm coughing. And sometimes, you know what, when I'm doing this, I lose a tab of something, or I even lose an article. So I have to completely edit all that out, and that takes time. This takes a lot of time. But I do appreciate those who do understand and support this. You know, trying to put out a really good product for you guys, and it's improving. Again, this is a one-man show. The only time it's not a one-man show is when I'm bringing other people on board. But I do appreciate the individuals out there that follow us and have given me feedback. Trying to build this into something better, and it's a continuous, it's a slow and steady. So thank you all. And this is Romeo 1 Oscar, and I am out.